You're listening to Nightmare on Film Street. The current time is 6:66. Traffic is clear ahead from here to the afterlife, but it's hell outside. For the next hour, you're on Nightmare Time. So, let's give a grave welcome to our hosts, John and Kim.
Hello again, fiends, and welcome to Nightmare on Film Street, horror for the casually obsessed. Sometimes we talk about torture porn, sometimes we talk about 80s slashers, and sometimes we talk about dark-ass Disney movies, which is the subject of today's episode. I'm John.
I'm Kim.
And today's movie is Something Wicked This Way Comes, the 1983 cult classic that has been haunting me since I was a child. I don't know about you, Kim. Is this a movie that you watched when you were younger?
I did not watch this one when I was younger. I was always aware of it, like I always knew of it, but it wasn't one that ever kind of came on my radar. Maybe I saw some of it on like the television.
With a title like that, you were just like, I gotta see this.
I know. It's a crime. It really, really is.
I don't think I knew anything about it. I was just like, great title, put it on. Let's go, Mom and Dad.
Yeah, I think the first time I watched it was with you, so I guess I lived through you on this one.
This has been a lifelong obsession of mine. I like it more than Stephen King's Needful Things. Like,
are they similar? Or?
They kind of are similar. Like, stranger rolls into town, offers you, you know, your dreams, but it comes at a price.
It always comes at a price.
Hey, it's got a fucking evil carnival. How could you go wrong? Believe it or not, this was not a huge success at the box office.
You know, it's same thing we experienced with the film we did last time, is that it's got a weird target market for the time. And especially this one, because our lead protagonists are young boys. Whereas I think The Watcher in the Woods was actually going for the tween audience. This one definitely targeted for kids, and it's very, very dark.
Yeah. So parts of it scared me as a kid. I think it's a movie that has played better as an adult, or for me as an adult, because I think the themes in it are a little too nuanced for kids to understand.
Arguably, like, the children would just simply not get it.
Well, just the idea that, like, death is inevitable, and, like, I don't know, you have a character who is literally given the option to, who's basically staring death in the face. It's practically tapping him on the shoulder, and he has the power to just walk away from it, but says no anyway. I don't know, there is an adult quality to the horror in this movie. And I guess just because the leads are kids for two-thirds of the movie, it's a kids movie. It was a weird marketing scheme. Doesn't necessarily look like it paid off for them, because the kids in 1983 didn't have cool parents.
Their parents were too cool to take them to the movies.
Too cool to go see a fucking dark carnival movie? All right.
But John, for anybody that hasn't been born and bred with Something Wicked This Way Comes, give us three good things about the movie.
Sure. Super easy. Number one, it's a creepy carnival. You cannot go wrong. Horror movies made for kids at a old-timey, like 1940s style carnival that's rolling in on the train, but is also super dark and will eat your soul.
Yeah, definitely a supernatural creepy carnival.
Love it. Number two has got to be Jonathan Pryce as the villain, Mr. Dark. He's a little Shakespearean for kids, I think.
He's a little operatic.
Yeah, but
he's got some flourish.
So fucking ominous as a villain. As soon as he shows up, it's like he has the whole town under his thumb.
He's got a Dracula stare, right? Quality about
him. He's got a Dracula quality, you're right.
He's very alluring, but also you know he's bad.
And number three, definitely is some very early special effects that Disney's kind of known for. Like, it's really good cartoon on top of live action that does not look like cartoon. Specifically, I'm thinking of like this really creepy green fog that rolls in from
I
the carnival.
I love when they do that. And even like the steam off the train when it's rolling into town, and you can see these tufts of smoke every like turn of the wheel.
Yeah.
And you're like, it's a cartoon, but it's so spooky.
Oh, like unofficial part four, or like three, like part number three, part B.
Whoa.
Fucking Pam Grier is like every evil woman in this movie. She's 17 evil women.
That has nothing to do with animated fog.
Okay, it's Jonathan Pryce and Pam Grier is your duo of villains in this movie. She's amazing. Like, and it's just, in half the time, it's just her eyes. She just stares at you and you're like, oh God, she's in my head. Love it.
I really want to know her deal, but I feel like that's Ray Bradbury's way of being like, you got to read the fucking book.
So funny story, before we throw over to the trailer, this was originally written as a short story.
Oh, wow.
That he, I read Wikipedia, that he that he adapted into a screenplay for Gene Kelly to direct. That project fell apart, so then he just, like, wrote it as a novel because it didn't look like anybody was going to make the movie. And then, I don't know, 10, 20 years later, boom, Hollywood's knocking on the door because they want to adapt that novel into a screenplay, which he also wrote for this movie.
Yeah, which is also really rare because Stephen King tries to do all the time and it does not work. It
doesn't always work.
Well, that's why you end up with voiceovers and every single side character from the novel having a little bit of time on the screen when you're like, guys, we got to get to the creepy carnival.
Yeah, like, I know this was your favorite part, but not really serving us a whole lot. I'll say right now, again, more Wikipedia facts here for you. That voiceover added after the fact. Ray Bradbury didn't put it in. Not a Ray Bradbury choice. I mean, we were both just like, of course, you let a writer adapt his own work. And he's like, you know what we need here? Narration. Can't lose all these beautiful words on the page.
Oh, boy.
Not his choice.
Maybe it was his choice. And maybe they were like, nah, 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 nah. And then it didn't work without it.
So a lot like The Watcher in the Woods, Something Wicked This Way Comes has a storied post-production history. And we'll get into it. But first, here's the trailer. And I'll be back in a second with some ratings.
Hellfire storms are coming. An electric storm to clean your streets and wash away your troubles.
For every heart, there exists a wish.
You ever play the numbers, Mr. Holloway?
Me? Never take risks.
For every soul, there burns a desire.
Boy, he's up.
Always was. It smells to me like we're gonna have visitors.
But never whisper your dreams, for someone might be listening. And for every wish, there will be a price. For every desire, there will be a cost.
My name is Mr. Dark. I advise you to respect it.
Dad, please be careful.
Will.
Will.
These boys I'm looking for, perhaps you know them?
Fine boy, fine. Both of them quite a credit to this little town, if you want to know the truth.
I do want to know the truth, sir. And the truth is that you are lying.
By the pricking of my thumb, something wicked this way comes.
Then rang the bells, both loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep.
Where do you come from? The dust. Where do you go to? The grave.
Yes. We are the hungry ones. Your torments call us like dogs in the night. And we do feed, and feed well. Tell me where the boys are hiding, and I can make you young again.
Ray Bradbury's fantasy tale of light and darkness is getting closer. Something wicked this way comes.
Something wicked this way comes. It's currently sitting at a 6.7 out of 10 on IMDb, 59% on Rotten Tomatoes, and a 3.3 out of 5 on Letterboxd. This movie is also directed by Jack Clayton, who apparently Ray Bradbury had worked with before on Moby Dick. Did you happen to look up Jack Clayton and some of the other movies that he's made?
I did not.
He directed the 1961 adaptation of Turning the Screw, The Innocents.
Oh!
Yeah, we almost covered that in the podcast. Or did we cover that in the podcast?
I don't know.
I know we covered The Haunting. Did we cover The Innocents? Anyway, Yeah, that movie, super haunting.
Yeah.
Mostly like a vibe mood piece.
Yes. Definitely the same vibe. They are on the same train.
Right? Yeah. As much as Something Wicked This Way Comes has like lots of visual kind of scares, and The Innocents has a couple as well, it's really the tone of the movie that sort of burrows into you.
Yeah,
right?
It's just the endless sense of foreboding.
Yeah. Juxtaposed with that, though, is like the fucking Norman Rockwell painting quality of the whole movie, though, right? Like, don't you hate the, oh, golly gee, opening of it? Like, just like, oh, just some schoolboys just, you know, making fun of their teacher and running through our small town. Oh, boy, what a great time to live.
No, I love it.
You love that?
I do love it.
I don't.
I love it. I love the whole little town square. I love the weird barber and the cigar shop owner.
Well, you want a vacation there.
I just want to live there.
Okay, all right.
With their spooky carnival rolling into town. And just my biggest compliment to this movie is that for a movie set in fall, it feels like fall.
That's a good point.
There's fucking leaves everywhere. People are wearing overcoats and hats. It looks goddamn cold.
And everybody's like, a carnival? This time of year? How preposterous.
Yeah, like you look at the new Hocus Pocus movie, even the old Hocus Pocus movie, and you're like, guys, you are in fucking Salem, Massachusetts. You are not wearing winter coats under your Halloween costumes. I don't believe it.
That's true.
Growing up, like Halloween and fall, like deep fall, this is in October, it's fucking cold.
Yeah, yeah, and then like New England, yeah. Yeah, I don't remember where this movie set. Did they say where it was?
I'm sure it's New England.
Massachusetts, yeah.
I'm sure it's New England.
It looks like it.
But they have leaves, and they're everywhere, and they're blowing into town. And for, you know, a title, Something Wicked This Way Comes, where, you know, darkness is floating in on the breeze, the fact that there are just leaves blowing the whole way through, it's just like, oh, give me that fall mood.
That wind is, like, kind of a character in the beginning of the movie, too. Like, it blows through everybody, and the wind picks up as the train's coming, like it's a storm rolling into town. Fucking love that. But my favorite image in the beginning of the movie with the wind is when you just see Mr. Dark in his top hat walking through town, tossing flyers into the air and just letting them like fly off.
I know, he's
they go.
Not even pinning them.
No, nowhere. It's just like, oh yeah, we just came in on the breeze. Like, you didn't know we were gonna be here, and surprise, we've showed up. But just, I don't know, something evil just like tossing invitations into the wind is like so creepy. And like having no regard for the posters, right? He's just crumpling them and tossing them.
And just very on brand. Like, yeah. Just so good for the title. Good work.
Yeah, it's like the circus leader is the fucking Slender Man.
I love that even though we know this carnival blew in on the breeze, the fact that they arrive on a train and then are just instantly set up, and you're just like, this is something creepy.
Yeah, why aren't the kids like...
Is that a real train?
The kids,
does that
literally...
train exist? John, here's my question of the day.
Oh, okay.
Is it a real train?
I
Because the carnival disappears, spoiler alert, in a tornado. The train does not pick them up again.
I don't think the train... Man, I'll say this. Sure, it's not real, but you could touch it, but it's not actually there. Like, it's a spirit of a train. I spent so much of the movie trying to think about the logistics of these old-timey carnivals that would show up on trains. I'm like, wait, so how does that work? Like, you roll into town, you set up the carnival at night, cool, yeah, now everybody knows that. That way in the morning when people wake up, like, oh shit, there's a fucking carnival here, it's like, this wasn't here yesterday. But then you also are on train tracks, so like, I guess you have to know, or at least notify people that you're on the track so another train doesn't come barreling through town. Like, this is just old-timey logistics that I don't understand. Like, how did nobody ever die getting hit by another freight train that was just like bringing corn into the town?
Didn't they have like a guy working on the switch?
Yeah.
And that's why you have all those haunted light stories, because he accidentally like didn't switch the light, or he was on the track when the train came and it's his light showing because he's a ghost.
Okay, so it was just a occupational hazard. Like, yeah, as a train, as a circus performer, you might become a ghost because of a bad switchman. So I did come across some really interesting stuff about the train rolling into town. And this is like such a common theme on our podcast, lately at least, talking about what the movie could have been. Like, especially in us talking about Friday the 13th, A New Beginning over in the Fiend Club, half the conversation was just like, oh yeah, but here's what they planned to do.
Yeah, but that movie was butchered to all hell, so.
I gotta tell you right now, based on some stuff that I was reading, it sounds like this movie was kind of butchered to all hell.
What?
Yeah. Like The Watcher in the Woods, they brought in a new director to shoot a few extra scenes. They changed the entire score because it was too scary. Yeah, they re-edited a whole bunch of shit. Like, they brought in a new editor to chop the movie up.
Wow.
Yeah, basically, at some point, Disney took the movie over from Ray Bradbury and Jack Clayton, who were both trying to stay as, of course, Ray Bradbury was, but Jack Clayton as well, trying to stay as close to the novelization as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And Disney, maybe learning from the mistakes of The Watcher in the Woods, decided that this was way too fucking scary. Like, we're making kids' movies. Yes, we're trying to branch out and to make something a little more adult, but not this adult.
Which is, it's interesting you say that, too, because something I noticed, and I don't want to slight the movie for this because the story is so good, but it does feel a little stilted, like the pacing of it. There's,
yes,
this, it's like scene to scene a bit, which makes sense if there are a lot of fingers in the pie.
Yeah, it's not a perfect movie.
It's not fluid in the way that you would expect a movie that's written by the author based on source material. They went in knowing the end, and it feels like it's a little bit like chunk, chunk, chunk.
Especially once we get to the end, but I do want to save that for when we're deep in it. So the train rolling into town sequence was apparently a whole special effects sequence that got cut from the movie. And it's really early computer-generated stuff.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, like before young Sherlock Holmes and shit. And apparently the whole idea was that you were supposed to see the steam from the train sort of creating the carnival. Like, it was like manifesting from the fog and the steam of the train.
Oh, I fucking love that.
Right? Yeah, so the smoke from the locomotive becomes the ropes, and tense tree limbs grow together to form a Ferris wheel. A spider web morphs into the Wheel of Fortune. Like, it's just like all of the creepy nighttime shit becomes the carnival.
Oh, I love that.
Wouldn't that have been amazing?
See, some things, though, are best in novel format, where they can, like, live and be created in your mind, because that sequence you can envision, and I don't know if not even just 1983 technology, but now technology would just be so CGI heavy that all of the magic would be removed.
They shot that. I'm not saying that that's part of the novel that scrapped. Like, they shot it, and it was in the original cut of the movie.
Wow.
But they went in and retooled a lot.
Yeah, because it's just like train rolls in, and then the kids arrive, and they're bam. Like, wow, carnival!
Yeah, like the cool thing about that train, though, is they watch it roll in, they chase after it, the carnival's already there, but also they see no one on the train.
Yeah, and there's no one in the carnival. Like, the carnival is set up and, like, down for the night.
You don't hear anybody, there's nobody yelling, like, grab that rope, like, make it tighter, or whatever, however tents are constructed. But, like, another cool sequence, apparently, like, do you remember that scene where the kids are hiding from Mr. Dark, and then the house is just infested with spiders, like,
yes,
thousands of real-life spiders?
Well, and then you have that really great, leading up to it, you have that haunted fog
hunting
for them through the town.
Yeah.
Which I fucking love. And then they choose spiders, and you're like, ah, okay, well, the ceiling breaking is pretty cool, but...
So it was supposed to be I'm not gonna say supposed to be, it was, they shot it, two giant fucking hands reaching in and grabbing them. That was the scene!
And that's less scary than spiders everywhere?
Apparently. Also, not as much for the child actors. I bet that was I bet they had nightmares about that scene for years.
The moment when, Will is so traumatized that he crawls into the back corner of the bed and he's just tucked in the corner.
Oh, I don't like that.
And then the sheet is moving.
Yeah.
And he finally gets the courage to lift up the sheet and it's filled with spiders. That would be the moment for me as a kid where I'm like, hello, nightmares. Welcome to my regular schedule.
Yeah, it's got so much creepy shit. What's the if you were a child watching this movie, what's the scene that would have fucked you up the most?
The spider lifting the sheets. Also, even at the very, very beginning, when the carnival has just rolled into town and the lightning rod guy sees who we now know to be Pam Grier in that, like, frozen ice block with the glowing ring. There's so little information provided in that scene that my little kid brain would have just imploded in on itself.
Really?
I would have just been like, spooky sarcophagi woman.
Because it's building questions.
Why,
like, hey,
she froze?
Why is she froze? Yeah, she's pretty great in this movie. The scene that fucked me up.
What is she? I don't even know.
She's whatever you need her to be.
Like, an assistant of magical proportions?
I don't know. Like, I like to imagine that she's a giant spider. Like, and she's the one making the web that, or, like, I don't know. Like, I think
like
her
that.
And Mr. Dark together are a spider and a web, and they're just You know, okay, well then Mr. Dark is the wind that draws the fly to the net.
No, he's the top hat that the spider wears.
Okay. Anyway, that's what I like to think of for them.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
The scene that fucked me up as a kid was when Mr. Dark is looking for the two children in town. He's he's brought the parade in, like, oh yeah, fun parade from the carnival, but it's really a search party. So the kids are hiding across town. They're phoning their dad. They're hiding in the sewers. And then Mr. Dark is talking to Will's dad. And he's like, have you seen these two boys? And he opens his palms and he's got tattoos of their faces. That creeped me out.
Yeah, that's fucking creepy.
I was already like, oh God. And then when he clenches his fists and blood starts dripping out from between his fingers, I was like, oh God. I think I turned it off. Like, I think I was like, I need to watch the rest of this after my afternoon snack. Like, I gotta take a quick little break, grab a sippy cup.
I need some carrots and ranch.
Yeah.
When you were mentioning at the top of the show about how it's got like levels of horror and there's even scares for you as an adult, watching this as an adult, I can tell you the scene that I would find the scariest is when Mr. Dark is basically accosting Mr. Holloway in his library.
Oh, yeah. And this is immediately after that hand sequence.
This is a very long sequence. In no other movie would this type of Shakespearean scare yes. be permitted.
Yeah, they really draw it out, but it's so good.
It's so good. So Jim and Will are hiding in and amongst the bookcases in Will's dad's library.
Yeah.
Like Mr. Dark library, is, yeah. you know, all-knowing. He's super supernatural, creepy. He knows they're fucking there. He knows that Mr. Holloway is Will's dad. And we learned at this point he's got this, you know, given trade where he's definitely acquiring more people for his carnival by utilizing their weaknesses against them.
Oh,
so
yeah.
the barber man really likes, you know.
That barber is so fucking horny. And this movie's yeah. like, do you smell that? There's women on the breeze.
Yeah.
Oh!
He really likes, you know, alluring faraway women. And the cigar man likes money and such and so forth. And then they become part of the carnival.
Yeah, well, football player who's lost his arm and his leg would really like them back. You know, there's also that.
You know, old teacher wants to be young again. I'm sure we'll talk about those in more detail. But he's promising Mr. Holloway the opportunity to go back in time. So the whole way through the movie, which is also a source of adult fear for me, they're very, very apparent that he's got a bad heart.
Well, yeah, he's a much older dad than anybody else in town. Like, even the boys make jokes that his dad is basically his grandpa.
He's old, but he's also biologically old.
Yeah.
And
he can't go running
smoking
around.
Smoking cigars the whole movie.
He's smoking and drinking. He's like, I wish I could just play catch with my boy. Like, I could tell you two things you could stop doing right now that might help with that.
Yeah, but so Mr. Dark just starts tearing pages out of this book that he's been reading. That's basically, you know, the guide to the evil carnival.
Well, it's even better than that. It's his grandfather or his father's journal entries.
Oh.
So it's literally his father's life that he's looking at. And that's how he finds out that the carnival had come back when even he was a boy. And his father, the minister, sensed evil in the carnival. So he's literally got a book where each page is like another, you know, month of his own father's life. And he's offering him to go back to like age 25 or 30, when most people would have a child Will's age. You know, you just got to tell me where the boys are and I will make you young again. And when he very clearly doesn't want to give his son up, he just starts ripping pages out, and like they glow gold before he tosses them away. And he's like, okay, well, there you go. Bam. That's gone. How about 35? 35 not young enough? Gone. And like we were going like year after year with each page. It is such an incredible sequence.
It's fucking dark and scary. And it really relates to the end too, because the whole movie kind of ends up being a story about a son and his father and kind of the legacy that's left. And all this dad wants to do is like leave a good memory of himself for his son, because that's how he feels he'll live on. And Mr. Dark is playing on this eternal life thing. It's just so many layers of nuance, like you said.
Yeah,
it's fucking scary in an existential way.
It sounds like a lot for a movie, for a kid's movie, because I love hearing you say that he wants to leave a good image of himself for his son, because his life is also like, yeah, I'm an old man and I can't do all the things that these young fathers can do, if those kids even have young fathers around in town. But he's been beating himself up.
Oh my God.
He's got so much regret, because like the thing that's defined their relationship,
at least according to Dad, because I don't know how much it actually resonates with Will. I guess enough that he knows not to bring it up or not to talk about it.
Yeah, and he never wants to talk about it. And it will definitely, if they don't do something about it now, will define their relationship as once he's an adult. That'll be all he remembers of his dad. Mm-hmm. That he was old, and that one time he almost let him die because Will was drowning and his dad was too scared to go into the water to save him.
And Jim Nightshade, Will's best friend, who's his kind of accomplice in the whole movie,
whose dad is
not
absent,
around
yeah.
anymore, has definitely left him and his mom. But at the time, Jim Nightshade's dad was the one that went in and saved him. So like a father that's not even present,
yeah,
but you know, did something heroic, outdoes a father that's there all the time but can't provide, in a sense.
Yeah, or at least feels like he has a bunch of shortcomings. And the crazy thing, he was also Jim's dad, who saved Will, was drunk at the time. Like, he was at the shore bank just drinking. And he like, I love the detail that his dad adds. Like,
he didn't even take off his shoes.
Yeah. There's so much adult stuff in it that I'm real surprised it didn't perform. I don't know, if I was an adult watching trailers for this movie, I would just assume, oh, kids movie. I don't like horror movies made for kids. I'm going to skip this one. It's not words I would say out loud, but the average movie-going audience probably skipped it thinking it was for kids.
I feel like that's the way with all of Ray Bradbury's stuff, is that it's packaged up like it is for children, but it is for adults.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think that's always been like one of the best qualities that he's had, is that he remembers how scary childhood was, so he can talk about it in that sense, but it's from the perspective of a person who knows that there's something scarier waiting for you, you know, 30, 40 years down the road.
But I think as an adult, for those things to tap into those, you have to go back to childhood. You have to go back to that world where you just accept things at face value, because you haven't learned not to disregard them yet. Mm. Like a scary carnival coming into town, there's a reason why there are only three people in town that kind of understand that there's something evil at its core. The two boys who see it for what it is, and Will's dad, who's desperate to make amends with his son. He believes him because he wants to be there for him.
That's true. I think he also is like incredibly risk averse, so he's skeptical every step of the way. Like, there's even a moment where the cigar shop guy asks him, like, hey, do you play the lottery? He goes, nope, I never take risks. Like, I've never taken a risk in my life, you know, and to a fault, and going to the carnival is like a risk for him. Like, he sees it immediately as a risk, so he doesn't even bother.
Yeah. Part of my childhood self, though, really just loves that these boys have somebody that believes them. Like, when they're hiding in the gutter and Will's dad is above and he gets his attention, and he's like, okay, come to the light. Like, the fact that they have somebody in their corner while they're against this ancient evil, yes, is just like, I love it so much, because most often it's the adults don't believe us.
Yes, it's just the kids with maybe the one crazy lady in town who everybody also hates and doesn't listen to. At least here it's a sensible older person who's like pretty well respected in the community. And as long as he can get some hard physical evidence, people will believe him. Hard to tell everybody that there's a carousel in town, that if you ride it backwards, you will become young again. Which should not be as scary as it is. Like, it should just be, oh, somebody hops on a carousel, it runs backwards, and then they come out a little boy. But when that happens in the movie, it's kind of horrifying.
No, it is. It's horrifying every time they use it and or mention it.
That little boy who, I guess he's like a circus hand. Like, he's kind of operating all of the evil carnival rides. But when they put him on the carousel and he becomes a child again, maybe I'm just being a little harsh to that little ginger boy, but he looks like he has no soul in those eyes.
It's because they shoot him from the ground up and there's like all of these deep shadows in his face.
Well, that, and like he's standing over top of a woman dying and he just smiles.
It's weird motivation there, though, because Mr. Dark's like, okay, I want to go capture that woman that wants to be young again.
Mm-hmm.
What we'll do is we'll reverse age my lead, Carney, and he'll pretend to be her nephew.
Yeah.
Thus capturing her youth. Like, what?
Yeah, he just has these spies that basically go into town. People don't notice that, like, the barber is missing, that the, I guess, malt shop or bar back is missing, like, the guy who's one-armed, one-legged.
It's because they're all at the carnival. They're all enamored by the carnival.
I guess that's true.
Nobody's visiting the local businesses that are, like, have put up a sign that says, out for a minute.
Yeah, sorry, zipped out. You would think that this is the kind of thing that would show up to a major city. Like, in a small town where there's maybe 50 people, if three of you go missing, that's a pandemic. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's an emergency.
Yeah, but he's magic. Maybe he just wrote them out of existence. Like, maybe when the carnival leaves town, all memory of
them. No one remembers them? Oh, fuck.
That's what I would bet on.
Yeah, that's dark, all right.
So, what is your opinion of why Mr. Dark is particularly focused, very zoned in on these two boys? Why does he want them so bad? Because they know the jig, or...
I think that's it. I think that's exactly it. Because they've learned the secret of the carnival.
Or because they see him for what he is. But it's got to be more than just they know too much. You know what I mean?
Well, they aren't...
It feels personal.
I think it becomes personal after that. I think at first it's just like these two harmless little boys who are a little too nosy for their own good. And they're not really focused on grabbing children. Like, they want children to grow old and have regrets and have sadness that they can exploit.
Maybe it's because the boys have sadness. Maybe it's because they have those regrets
and
those pains.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yes, because both of them have
daddy issues.
But, I mean, and mommy issues, let's be real.
Yeah, so that's a really interesting idea, that darkness came to them earlier in life than it comes for most people.
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting angle. I like that a lot. But I think story-wise, it's just because they peeked behind the curtain and now they got to get them. So that way, when they leave town, we don't have these two kids that are aware of the carnival and know to warn people when it comes back. Because it seems like it will probably come back in another 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, it's like, you know, like Stephen King's It, you know, it's just, it's got a lifespan that it returns to. Like, once a generation, it comes and it collects all of the most broken people.
Oh, I love that.
And they just disappear out of streets.
Oh, that's just like a box of horror chocolates to me.
Right?
Like, you're just selling me more of this movie.
And that's why this movie has kind of sat with me my entire life. Like, I love it. Even the end of the movie doesn't make any kind of sense. Like, it's really a bit of mashed potatoes. Like, it's way more psychedelic than you would expect for a kid's movie. Like, we go into a fun house, there's fog everywhere, and it's just like acid trip imagery about weird, creepy shit and witches and ghouls that are aging faster and becoming monsters. And it's a weird, weird finale.
Well, yeah, and then how they end up killing Mr. Dark, quote-unquote killing him, is throwing him on the carousel and putting it forward so that he, like, decays into this, like, evil skeleton thing with these long-ass fingers that I love and visually wonderful. But you're like, I kind of wanted a bigger ending for him.
I mean, the ending was different. I don't know if I remember reading like what the ending necessarily was. I will say though, if you go to the Ray Bradbury Museum or Institute or whatever, they have a VHS copy of the original cut of the movie.
Like, is it on just like, can you watch it?
I don't know.
Oh. First of all, like in a glass case, and they're like, do not touch.
That's probably
do not touch the original.
Fingers crossed they occasionally do like a screening or something. I mean, why not?
Well, I mean, we have that weird ass ending for The Watcher in the Woods. Surely we could have a slice of the Something Wicked
Please,
This Way Comes.
Just
ending.
Give it. Oh, you're saying I should have looked on YouTube before recording?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I mean, maybe it exists. But even the lightning rod salesman uses one of his lightning rods to stab. Is it Pam Grier? Or just, I think he just stabs the glass. Yeah, he stabs Pam Grier. And there's been all of this talk about how the carnival always leaves when the storm, like with a storm. Like basically like lightning shoots down on the carnival and it just dissipates into the air. Like there's a lot of backstory about from Mr. Holloway's father's journal about how the carnival basically just disappears when a bad storm comes.
Well, and you can kind of feel the finale coming because a storm is rolling into town.
Yeah.
So they know that they have to rescue before the storm takes the carnival
away. Because it'll take away their dad or their kids. Yeah. But even the whole movie, there's been talk about a big storm coming. And I guess you expect it to be that the carnival is the big storm, but it's like, oh shit, an actual real storm comes, and the storm sort of washes away the carnival, and there's just like no evidence of it after it's gone. I love dark carnival shit. I really, really like this movie. And it's interesting that it's had such a cult following, because honestly, growing up, I just thought everybody loved it. Because I was like, well, a title like that, oh, come on. And then anytime that I heard Something Wicked This Way Comes, like referenced in pulp culture, I assumed they were talking about this movie. I was like, wow, this book really had an impact on people. Like, it did not occur to me that this is a quote from Macbeth. and it's just like only one throwaway dialogue in like the Shakespeare off that Mr. Hyde and Mr. Holloway have.
Mr. Hyde,
Mr. Dark. Sorry. Yeah, no, I was my brain was scrambled there. I was thinking about him on the carousel, and it's like he's the painting of Dorian Gray, but for some reason my brain slipped in Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde.
It's all related.
Yeah, it's all there. Literature. But yeah, this has always been like a big favorite of mine. Sorry, was there something else you wanted to mention before we get ratings in?
I mean, this is related to nothing that we've been talking about,
okay.
But this movie makes me want to watch Pagemaster.
Well, yeah.
Dad's a librarian, boy is a little blonde kid with glasses.
Well, they're just hiding in like they're hiding in the tops of the books away from a villain who's like chasing them through the library and shit. Hell yeah. I gotta tell you, if more of Pagemaster was as like heavy hitting as the first 20 minutes when they go into the horror section, we would have already talked about it on this podcast.
Yeah, Pagemaster's pretty spooky though.
Yeah.
And it also deals with, like, fathers and sons and...
Don't, it's a Disney movie. They all do.
Is it Disney? I can't remember.
Yeah.
Is it?
Oh, Pagemaster? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't know.
It came in a clamshell. I think that's about as much... as far as kid brain goes, that's a Disney movie.
Yeah, but DreamWorks was doing clamshells, too, so who knows?
You ready for ratings?
Yeah, so ratings of this movie. It's hard because, like I said, it is a little choppy and
sure.
it does feel a little slow. And there are a lot of like mysteries unanswered, but I don't necessarily need answers for them, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
I really don't know Pam Grier's deal.
Yeah.
But I don't need to know it.
Yeah. Well, it's like nightmares, right? Like you don't have all the answers in nightmares.
And Mr. Dark is an all-time villain, and I'm surprised he doesn't get referenced more in things.
Mm.
And I'm surprised that we don't see more of that style, that like literature, Shakespeare. Because when he does his speech in the library, it is fucking scary.
Yeah, like the us talking about it, I'm like, yeah, no, this sounds like something I wouldn't necessarily want to watch.
No,
it's amazing.
Yeah, like,
and it's Jonathan Pryce's performance for sure.
Oh, 100%. Like you watch it and you're stuck on his eyeballs and you're just like, yeah, you've got me. I'm here with you.
Yeah, you believe that he's been around for centuries and
is
just as powerful as he was back in the day.
Yeah, like he's giving a Broadway performance in that scene. So I'm going to give it a 3.5 out of 4.
Oh, wow. That's a surprise. I did not expect that. I'm also a 3.5 out of 4, and I've been fucking watching this movie my entire life.
Bitch, I love Dark Ass Disney.
Okay, all right, yeah. I was really excited to hear what you'd say about it, because, like, yeah, I've watched it with you before, but I don't think we've ever, like, really sat down and taken it in. And as a person who didn't grow up with it, you're kind of giving me the, like, you know, adult discovery rating.
And, oh, but I'm also a child, so we all know this.
Well, there you go. 3.5 out of 5, 3.5 out of 4 from the both of us.
So I have a finale question for you.
Yeah.
Of the two movies we covered in our little Dark Ass Disney segment, which one is scarier? Which one is the darkest?
Which one is the darkest ass Disney movie? Well, I gotta go with Something This Way Comes. Because I think saying that the Watcher in the Woods is the darkest one is implying that you're watching a version of the movie that doesn't really exist.
Yes. Yeah, I agree with you there.
And arguably, and funny enough, the version of Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is apparently not as scary as the version of the movie that doesn't exist, is already fucking scary.
Yeah, I think it's overall more scary than The Watcher in the Woods. The Watcher in the Woods has individual sequences that more horrifying.
Yes.
Than Something Wicked This Way Comes. But Something Wicked This Way Comes has that lasting horror, like that fear of death and that fear of aging and a bunch of adult fears that any age you watch this movie, you're going to find terror in.
Right? Just like the seasoning that brings out the spice in this dish that is, like, made for children.
You're 6 years old? Spiders and evil fog.
Oh, fuck.
You're
yeah.
8 years old, your dad doesn't love you. You're 10 years old, your dad failed you.
If you're 50 years old, you're going to die before your kid just learns to love you.
Like, you're 12? Be careful. Women are black widows.
It just, the horror doesn't end. But that's just our opinion. Let us know what you thought of Something Wicked This Way Comes and The Watcher in the Woods. Let us know about all your favorite dark-ass Disney movies, because they've been making dark shit since they first started making movies back in the 30s. Hit us up on Twitter at NOFSPodcast or in the Nightmare on Film Street Discord at NOFSPodcast.com/Discord. We'd love to talk with you about movies there.
If you're a fan of Nightmare on Film Street, consider giving us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening to this. And consider supporting us on Patreon by joining the Nightmare on Film Street Fiend Club. There's a ton of bonus episodes and events like watch parties and cool stuff happening there all the time. So head to nofspodcast.com/fiendclub to join.
We'll be back again next Thursday, but until next time, I'm John.
Kim.
Stay creepy.
It appears you made it out alive, but we'll get you next time. Help us to grow the horde. Leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you subscribe. More terror can be found lurking on our website, nofspodcast.com. Until next time, stay creepy, fiends.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.